Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Singletracks is psyched that Jameis Spikes has come on as a supporter of the podcast and is also a supporter of the website. Jameis has been designing and building quality bikes since 1979, and they were among the first to produce mountain bikes beginning in 1982. The brand has brought the world some iconic and award-winning mountain bikes over the past 40 or so years, and the Dragon has been the soul of the brand for decades. Introduced in 1993, the Jameis Dragon Hardtail delivers the feel that only comes with high-quality steel, and it's done so for nearly 30 years running. The newer Jameis Portal and Hardline full-suspension bikes feature the innovative and race-proven 3VO suspension platform, built into both carbon and aluminum frame options. You can check out this year's all-new Dragon and 3VO bikes, along with the entire lineup of Jameis high-performance mountain bikes, at jameisbikes.com. That's jameisbikes.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Singletracks Podcast. My name is Jeff, and today my guest is Chip Hawkins. Chip is the founder and chairman of the board at Wahoo Fitness. The company's stated mission is to create innovative solutions to make hard-fought goals attainable and lives better through products like smart trainers, bike computers, watches, and heart rate monitors. Thanks for joining me, Chip.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, how long have you been a cyclist?
My journey started 15 or so years ago, around 2006, 2007. I did a lot of BMX as a kid, but really as an adult, I really didn't do much on a bike until my kind of mid 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. What made you decide to get into cycling?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I got challenged by my wife and some neighbors to a duathlon.
Mm.
So we all went down to Callaway Gardens, south of Atlanta, to do a duathlon, and I had a mountain bike, so I brought my mountain bike, and I did not finish the duathlon. I got it was a 5K run, which I ran without walking, which I was impressed with, and then I did the two loops around Callaway Gardens, about 20 miles on a mountain bike on the road.
Yeah,
and then I was supposed to run another 5K, which I could not do, and so that kind of got me thinking maybe fitness is more important than I've thought about it in the past. And so kind of the rest is history. I bought a Schwinn recumbent, started training in my basement with that.
Oh, wow.
And then I found some friends that were cyclists and started riding, doing road riding and found love with it and never looked back.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you studied technology and engineering in college. Did you think that you might one day apply that knowledge to a consumer product or even to the kind of the fitness and cycling space?
No, I never dreamed I would. I was building floating boat docks.
Oh, wow.
When I started this journey there's a far cry between floating boat docks and big aluminum structures and small electronic gadgets that I ended up doing a lot of now.
Yeah. Well, I noticed too that actually that was Wahoo was the name of your dock company, right? Are those two connected in any way, or is just like, that's just a really good name?
That's exactly what it is. It's a really good name. I was in the dock business, running the dock business when we started Wahoo Fitness. And it's funny, we were at the time mostly working with iPhones, and we had this dongle that lets you get heart rate data in your iPhone. And so we were trying to come up with a name for this startup, and they were bad. It was like fitness for phones and lots of different things. And one of my engineers, Jim Delosier, in the doc business, said, "Why don't you just call it Wahoo Fitness?" It's like, they're a genius. So yeah. I always make sure to give Jim credit because it's just a really good name.
Yeah. It almost, I mean, to me, it sounds better as a fitness one than a doc. That's kind of a, it's kind of a weird doc name, but yeah, works, I guess.
It works. It was Wahoo Creek on Lake Lanier for those.
Oh, I see.
For George and yeah, one of the tributaries that feeds Lake Lanier is Wahoo Creek. That's where it came from.
Okay, gotcha. Well, yeah, you mentioned one of the early products, and from what I can tell, Wahoo was basically started in 2009 to help riders track, measure, and share training data from sort of these existing fitness sensors. It was kind of a bridge between like the smartphone and the other sensors that were on the market. What were the limitations of the available sensors at that time?
Well, I was everything I bought, I hated. I could go on and on and on. I was training for that duathlon, and I bought all the gadgets. So I had a Garmin bike computer, which I think was the 305, one of the early ones. So it's a GPS, and and then I had a power meter, which was PowerTap. It was the PowerTap. They called it wireless, but it really had a wire that went from right near the hub up to your handlebars, and it had a so I had this little yellow computer that was just for the power data. Mm-hmm. So you could read your power. And then right next to it, I had another computer that was the GPS data. And those two things didn't talk or mix in any way. So, what people take for granted today, like looking at a file on Strava or Training Peaks and seeing all the graphs and how they mix, I had to write Excel macros back in the day to be able to see, where you were when you did a certain power, I was on a hill. Now I get it.
Right.
So it was really, that was the problem that I was trying to solve is, those things should be combined, and they all use DAMP Plus. So the wireless technology was there. It just, it just wasn't executed very well. And so that was my first idea is, let me get this in an iPhone and I'll write a cool iPhone app and, be able to present it all in the way I want to see it. And it was really, it wasn't a grand business plan to start a business. It was me trying to solve the pain points I had personally.
Right. Right. And all for just a neighborhood sort of challenge, right? I mean, this wasn't like a real race or anything. You weren't trying to like get on the podium necessarily. You're really just trying to figure out like, how do I get in shape for this?
Yeah. So it was a combination of a couple things that, I was training for that duathlon because I wanted to go back and not only finish, but hopefully do well. Mm-hmm. And I was riding with a group in Dunwoody, kind of one of the little suburbs of Atlanta, Dunwoody Cycling. And on Tuesdays, we would do like a team time trial, the 6 mile loop. Uh-huh. And I would collect all the data with my power meter and my GPS, and nobody else had anything like that. And I started collecting it, and I'd get our times and I'd put my average power because we didn't have anything else to look at. Mm-hmm. And for, 4 or 5, 6 mile loops every Tuesday. And everybody got so excited about it, and I actually had a little website I'd posted on, and everybody, before I even got to work, people would be sending me an email like, where are the numbers? They want to see them.
Yeah.
So being able to automate that and share that data was really what I was trying to do, is kind of make it as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. Versus the pain that it was.
Yeah. Well, it sounds too like what you identified was more of like a software solution than a hardware one, even though I guess kind of Wahoo now, I don't know, seems like more of a hardware company, but maybe you would disagree. Is it more software or is it hardware?
Well, it's, that's a very good question. It's we were definitely a hardware company. All of our revenue comes from hardware. We have more software developers in Wahoo than anything, because it really is about the experience. And really the second chapter to Wahoo was the other piece of what I was doing, which was training on a CompuTrainer, which from the day I bought it, I absolutely hated. And so that's really where we went to more of a product hardware company with a lot more mechanical aspects when we built the kicker.
Ah, right. I see.
So, but even the kickers, it's the mechanical pieces are pretty, fundamental engineering problems. It's getting the software right and the accuracy and reliability and all those things.
Right. So right.
It's very, very intertwined.
Yeah. Well, talking about sort of those early days, you know, a lot of your products focused on using the smartphone as a hub for the, all these fitness sensors. But then in 2016, I believe Wahoo released a GPS device. So what is the advantage of using a dedicated fitness sort of cycling computer unit over the smartphone that everybody already has in their pockets? You know, I feel like we already have a very powerful device that we carry around with us all the time. So why do we need sort of a separate unit to manage our fitness data?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was fully in the camp of the smartphone is good enough. Even early on, you know, one of the products that we tend to forget about at Wahoo was we had this iPhone case that was waterproof, shockproof, and it had the Ant radio in it. So you could put your phone in in this case and put it on your handlebars, and it was basically protected against anything. I mean, we made YouTube videos running over it with a car. it was really indestructible. But I think there's real practical limitations to the phone around battery life, and the screens just aren't really made for, you know, sitting horizontal in the sun. It's harder to read. Yeah, if you leave your bike sitting stationary with your phone face up, it's, you know, 10 minutes in the sun, it'll overheat and shut down.
Yeah.
Those practical limitations. But then there's also the fickle nature of road cyclists. I used to ride with everybody, and I would have my phone on my handlebars, and I swear people were fascinated with it, but true roadies will not do it. It's just not, I don't know if it's not cool. It's it's a Fred thing to do. So ultimately building the element that we put out was me effectively giving up and saying, all right, people are never going to buy our cases and never going to use their iPhone. And it was counterintuitive to me, you know, as a kind of nerd and a tech guy, I thought, well, the phone has everything you need.
Right.
You know, we had a backup battery to solve that problem, but it is, you know, you get a whole lot more battery life. You get true waterproof, you get shockproof, you get a screen. You know, the screens we use in our computers are reflective. So the sun shining on it makes them easier to read instead of harder to read. So there's a lot of things that kind of scream.
Yeah.
It is the right thing to do. And it's proven out. I mean, people love to use the dedicated computers. And we take advantage of your phone as well for the internet connection it provides and for the, you know, being able to upload and that sort of thing and configure it.
Right.
Configure the computer with the more convenient interface.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one of the things I noticed in testing the Element sort of early on was that it was one of the first that used, you know, that connection with your smartphone to do a lot of interesting things. And, you know, you're able to connect to even like third party services where, you know, your data goes from your GPS to your phone to your Strava or the other direction. And yeah, it was just a more connected experience where it was like the Element was kind of an extension of your phone rather than like the standalone thing that kind of operated on its own.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we tried to use it for, the things it's best at, you know, being able to read it, being able to interact with push buttons instead of a touch screen while you're riding. But then the things it's hard to do, you know, it's hard for us to be as good as Apple at user interface. So, you know, right. you can use an iPhone app to configure the screens on our device or set up third-party connections, all those things. So it kind of took advantage of the technology that made sense where it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And hearing about your road biking friends sort of making fun of you for having a smartphone on the handlebars, it makes sense to me now too, because I've seen in some of your marketing for the Element and the Bolt that, you know, it's like super aerodynamic. And as a mountain biker, I'm like, yeah, like, okay, I don't get it. But yeah, sounds like your road bikers were giving you some advice on that end as well.
Yeah. Like the Bolt is actually, I think it saves 20 or 40 seconds in a 40K time trial. You know, it's like, it's a real deal. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess so. Yeah. That is pretty serious for road biking. But yeah. And then as mountain bikers, I guess for us, the thing that is better than putting your smartphone on your handlebars is just crashing. You don't want to destroy your phone. And these GPSs too, they're super rugged. I mean, they don't have the glass screens and all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, I can definitely see why people would prefer to have that on their bars than a smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely don't want to crash. Go head over handlebars with the phone up there.
Right. Well, one of the things I want to ask you about is how important accuracy and precision are when it comes to fitness data tracking. It seems like a lot of riders, that's something that they're very interested in understanding and knowing. But how important is it that you get that stuff right? And also, I guess, too, we should probably explain sort of the difference between accuracy and precision, because those are talking about sort of two different things, right?
Yeah. I'll let you, I don't want to embarrass myself by getting this wrong. So,
yeah. So, well, yeah, my, I guess, layman's definition would be that accuracy is like how close you are to the real number. So if you're trying to get speed, you want to know like how close are you to your actual speed? Whereas precision is like how, I guess, for lack of a better term, like how many decimal places you have where you can, you know, get down to the thousandth of a mile per hour. So is that stuff important? Does it matter? Like if my buddy's GPS says that we went 10 miles and mine says we went 9.3, like, does that matter when we're trying to, you know, focus on fitness and that sort of thing?
You know, it's a great question. I think it does matter. You have to take it with a grain of salt. I think the places where it matters most, you know, when it comes to training to me, are when you get glaring errors and you need to fix those. A good example is having a heart rate monitor malfunction. So if you're tracking your fitness using, you know, some of the Training Peaks metrics like TSS and intensity factor and using heart rate, mm-hmm. you know, if you do an hour workout and your average heart rate is 240 because the hardware messed up, you know, ours or someone else's, that can make your training load completely wrong. So, right. You know, I think it's those glaring errors and the ability to fix those that are, that's really important. It's one of the things that we're not perfect at it yet. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, acknowledging we'll never be perfect at recording it, mm-hmm. and then giving people a means to fix that. You know, I did it yesterday. I went for a run and I left my watch paused for a mile. So I came back. It's like, you know, I didn't run 7 miles. I ran 8. Yeah. So I really want that data to be right. Historically, and it's not critically important, but it's personally important. You know, I want to know how many miles I ran or how many miles I rode.
Right. Yeah, it's super important. I was going to ask you about that, sort of that psychology of like, you know, either you forget to start your GPS, which actually I should mention the Element, it has like a little reminder, like you turn it on and then you start riding. It's like, don't you want to start the ride? Like it knows you're moving, which is awesome. But still, yeah, we forget, or like even worse, the GPS like crashes or whatever halfway through the ride and we don't realize it. Like what is that psychology? I mean, it sounds like you get it because you're a runner and a cyclist and like, but why does that matter to us? Like we're still getting a good workout in regardless of whether the GPS is tracking us.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny. You hear if it's not on Strava, it didn't happen. I think the social aspect of it is really interesting. It really matters to people. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to share what they did and to have it representative of what they actually did.
Yeah. Well, when it comes to sort of tracking fitness data too, I mean, I would imagine maybe the more important thing is that your tracking device is consistent, you know, so maybe it's not completely accurate, but at least it's measuring you the same way each time so that you can kind of compare previous efforts to your current effort and sort of get by that way. Right. So is that true? Like, do I need to know exactly what my heart rate is, or do I just need to know what it is kind of relative to other efforts that I put in?
Well, it definitely is more important to understand your own capabilities and relative efforts. Yeah, it's probably most true with power. You know, if you have a lot of people will use, you know, we call them dumb trainers, but you know, if you don't have a kicker, you have a dumb trainer, you can estimate, you know, with formulas, with some of the software, what your power is. And it's fairly repeatable, and it may be off from your actual power by 10 or 20%, but as long as it's repeatable and it's always off by 20%, you can see progress. And that's, I think that's important, being able to see whether, you know, this month, that same hill, I accomplished in this amount of time versus that amount of time, or my power went up or down, are definitely more important than the absolute accuracy of the data.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like, you know, one of your pain points, one of the things that sort of led you to starting Wahoo was not really finding what you needed in terms of the existing fitness software that was available to analyze some of the data you were collecting. Do you think today there's good software for that? I mean, obviously you guys partner with a lot of third parties that can do that data analysis and things like that. Do you think there's still pieces of the puzzle that are missing, perhaps, that maybe in the future we'll have even better data analysis for our fitness data?
Yeah, I think there's still room for improvement. I think, you know, Strava does a good job. I think probably the missing link in a lot of the software now is the ability to do that error correction I was talking about. You know, I get frustrated when something is, you know, Strava is a good example. If you have a bad heart rate data and it goes in, there's not a real good way. There's not a way that I know of to go and fix that. So my loads, you know, if I look historically at my loads, it's hard to use their system as is. Training Peaks has a lot of capabilities there. You can go to the workout and you can edit, you know, you can edit any of those numbers. If my average heart rate was really, you know, I've been using heart rate enough. I know what a typical ride would be, and it should be about 120, and it was 200. I can go edit it, which helps with those numbers. You know, I think the place that there's room for improvement, or that, you know, a lot of the, if you want to truly improve today, I think you need a coach. You know, you need to have someone who's helping analyze those numbers for you, giving you a, you know, kind of a training plan. There's a ton of companies and people trying to figure out how to do that with artificial intelligence. And I don't think anyone's nailed that yet, but it's definitely possible. And so that's probably where we'll see more things in the future. You know, I want to train for a century. I want to train for a marathon. You know, here's a plan, and I got sick for this week. Here's what I should do as a result of, you know, here's how I should adjust that plan or adjust my expectations for what I'm going to do. You know, those sort of things are certainly possible, but I don't think anyone's figured them out yet.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it makes me think of like a GPS that's routing you to a destination, and you know, you make a wrong turn and it like recalculates the route. And it's like, yeah, I could see that for fitness, where you have a detour in your training and it's like, okay, we can fix that, we can get you back on track. And yeah, that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I think it's, like I said, it's possible, but no one's nailed it yet. Now you gotta call your coach and he'll say, all right, it's okay. Yeah, things will be all right. We're going to do this instead.
Yeah. Well, and you make a good point about the coach too, because a lot of it has to be psychological. A lot of it, you know, I mean, we need help motivating ourselves and yeah, telling ourselves it's okay that you had a bad day or bad training for this day. So yeah, coaches, that makes a lot of sense. Do you think today's algorithms are helping riders make significant gains? I mean, it sounds like you were an early believer in data, but it's still a relatively new thing for people to have access to all of this data. Are you seeing that in sort of people's performances in any way? Do you track that at all?
You know, I don't know that we track it specifically, or I track it specifically. I think, you know, interestingly, indoor trainers, probably more than the data that you get from using them, have caused almost a step change in people's fitness. You know, with the advent of Zwift and Trainer Road and Sufferfest, you know, our own system, you know, you're able to, in a short amount of time, get a very specific workload and training load, and benefits are real. I mean, that's early on, the success we had with the kicker in a lot of ways was because, you know, one guy in a riding group would buy a kicker and he would go from the back of the pack to the front of the pack in a matter of months. And that led to more of the people in that group buying a kicker, because they're like, what's going on here? You know,
yeah.
My little brother is a great example. He, he rode with a group in Mississippi, and I sent him an early kicker, and he said, "Man, Chip, I'm the fastest guy in our group now." And I always joke, because I think Ocean Springs, Mississippi, this little town where I grew up, is had the highest penetration of kicker sales early on because of his success riding out there. They all bought one.
Wow. Yeah. That's how you know you have a good product. Yeah, I was looking too, you know, I was curious about this, and it's hard to compare, obviously, you know, speeds in mountain biking, especially the courses are always different, and, you know, the weather plays a big role, and road cycling as well. I mean, you know, you look at Tour de France or, you know, I don't know any other road bike races. That's the only one I'm familiar with, but I did look at like track cycling, because that is something that like you can, you know, it's very standardized distance. It's often indoors, so weather's not a factor. And I was surprised to see that, like, over just the last 2 or 3 years, like, over half of the world records have been broken in track cycling. And, you know, I don't know how that compares to, like, running or other sports, but it does seem like maybe the only thing that's really changed, I guess, is fitness data. I mean, that's something that's people are using more and more of, and it does seem to be working.
Yeah, no, I definitely think it is. It's kind of more effective training, more you know, using ergometers and erg mode for your training loads. And track cyclists also. It's they're probably even more than triathletes. It's technology. You know, it's eking every little bit of aerodynamic benefit out of the bikes and the
right.
I think they were saying some of those bikes that they were using in the Olympics were $30,000-$40,000 bikes. So
whoa, yeah. So it's not just digital technology. It sounds like it's also some of the bikes themselves.
Yeah. Aerodynamics plays a massive role, but it's interesting you bring mountain bikes up, because you know, mountain biking for me, it's funny. I've got a little bit too much of an adrenaline junkie in me, and probably my favorite thing to do in the world is mountain bike. But I grew up water skiing, where, you know, if you're not falling, you're not learning, and I follow that same mantra on a mountain bike, and it's just not like I literally have to make myself not mountain bike, because I don't heal the way I used to. I'm getting too old, and I just. Yeah. I can't take it easy on a mountain bike. I'm going to always be pushing at the edge of the, you know, right at the edge of my capabilities and falling more than I should. As I got more fit, when I'd go back to a mountain bike, that ability to get your average power and your functional threshold power up is incredible, because that's where all the gains are. It's up the hills and even on the flats, you know, you don't realize how much faster you can go. Yeah, the downhills are the downhills. That's going to be skill. But I surprise all my mountain biking buddies when I go with them. They're like, "Well, you don't even mountain bike much. How are you keeping up with me?" You know, it's like, well, it's just being able to pedal harder.
Right.
And it's hard. I mean, mountain biking, as great as it is and as fun as it is, it's hard to get good training to build your leg strength and your aerobic endurance, because it is so much off and on. So you get better, you know, I feel like you get that great training to get, you know, to build your speed on a mountain bike by training on a trainer.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that, you know, power measurement, power output is something that a lot of road bikers measure as a part of their training. Is it useful to look at that for trail rides? I mean, sounds like you're kind of saying that because mountain biking is a lot of, you know, it's like a hard effort, and then you coast for a bit. Does that make it harder to actually use that power data and to make that useful for training?
It's useful. It's useful in different ways. I think, you know, on the road, a lot of times it can be just your average power. You know, if you're cruising along, I know what I can hold for 10 minutes, and I know what I know if I'm going too hard, when I'm going to crash. And, that's completely different on a mountain bike, because you might have, you know, a 60-second effort might be a big effort, because that's going to be, you know, the top of the hill or whatever. So it is definitely valuable on a mountain bike. I think it's much more valuable, you know, in the training sessions, you know, indoors or on a road bike, probably, than on a mountain bike, because if you have a long climb, then it's probably valuable to be able to use the numbers while you're riding to say, oh, yeah, I need to moderate a little bit. but for the most part, it's kind of just give it everything you got when you need to, and then right. And then rest when you can.
Yeah. Can you use heart rate data? Is that helpful at all? Like if you're kind of trying to keep a range of your heart rate, when you're mountain biking, or is it the same thing where you're just, sometimes you're just going to have to spike it and wait for it to come back down?
Yeah. It's very much the same thing. I mean, the benefit of power over heart rate is it's instantaneous. So if you're, you know, if you're climbing, you can look at the power and say, oh, that's too much. If you look at your heart rate, you know, you'll say, oh, that's too much 60 seconds later, which may be too late. So, it's more just has a lag to it, which in mountain biking is, you know, less helpful because the times that you're doing hard efforts are shorter. So I think, you know, power is probably more valuable in understanding whether you're going too hard or whether you should give it more.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it seems like a big piece of the fitness puzzle is nutrition. Is there any way that sensors can help us in that area?
You know, the only thing, you know, Phil Sutherland's a good friend of mine, and they've got, he has a startup called Super Sapiens, and they're using continuous glucose sensors. Originally, they were intended for diabetics, but they work for anyone. And I've been experimenting with it, and it's actually fascinating. So you get a continuous monitoring of your blood sugar.
Okay.
And, you know, it's still early with the science and the discoveries they're making, but being able to understand, you know, how much your current kind of muscle fuel is available is really powerful. Are you about to bonk, or, you know, should you have something to eat, you know, and then prepping for rides, you know, understanding, you know, what you should and shouldn't eat.
Right.
I think definitely. Yeah. Plays
Food intake, like what you eat. It seems like there's a lot of apps for that. And I could see how people maybe would like use those and try to correlate it with their workouts and sort of their fitness routine. Is that something that's helpful for people or something that you've tried yourself?
You know, I have when I, if I'm trying to prep for a race and lose weight, it's probably the only time I do it. Just to keep myself honest, I've used MyFitnessPal a lot over the years, you know, for a few weeks at a time to kind of get ready for a race, drop a few pounds, but I've never been able to make it a kind of lifestyle or a habit. Generally, if I need to lose weight, I just work out more.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. Yeah. It depends on what your motivation is and how much self-control you have. So yeah, for a lot of us, it's like, I'm just going to keep eating. So I might as well work out harder. So
yeah, I think that's the real reason I exercise. So I can eat a lot.
Right. Well, Wahoo makes a number of products, the Kicker, for example, that we've talked about for indoor fitness training. And I have to say, mountain bikers really hate riding indoors. It's like against everything that we're interested in and what we want to do. But as you mentioned, there are real sort of fitness gains that can be made from riding indoors, and especially with a smart trainer. So I'm curious to know, like, does technology make the experience any less terrible? I'm not someone who's really even used a smart trainer. I have friends who do, but, you know, what's sort of the sales pitch? Why should I do it? And why is it going to be not as terrible as, like, you know, getting on a set of rollers or something like that?
No, it's funny. I feel like that ship has sailed. Like, most people that have bought a smart trainer love it. You know, they don't hate it anymore, and I actually find it competes with outdoor riding or mountain biking for their attention, because of the, you know, because you can still, you get a lot of different, you know, you get training benefits, but then, you know, you've got things like Road Grand Tours or Zwift, or you know, where you can actually go ride with your friends anywhere in the world in your house. You know, it's kind of been gamified. So I won't pretend it's the same sport as mountain biking, but you get the benefit when you do go outside to mountain bike from the added fitness. And it's a hell of a lot of fun. I think, you know, generally people love it. It's so that idea that, you know, mountain bikers don't like, you know, riding indoors, and, you know, that's kind of what, that's the problem we solved. And I don't think many people kind of think that way anymore. So yeah, mm-hmm. I'd say you definitely need to get yourself a smart trainer and play around with it. I think you'll love it. Most people do. It's really rare for someone that gets a smart trainer and gets on some of the different apps that are available to not fall in love with it. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't replace mountain biking, obviously, but it's a lot of fun. It's not terrible.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I mean, I think the part that I haven't heard before that's sort of helping sell it to me is that you'll enjoy the actual mountain bike rides more because you have that fitness and, you know, you're not out there suffering as much. You can ride longer, you can ride faster and all that sort of thing. And I imagine too, with the pandemic, like this is the thing that a lot of us need is, you know, we're still able to ride with other folks, but you know, we can do it from home. And yeah, it definitely seems like a 21st century sort of, you know, new way of looking at cycling in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I really believe it is.
Yeah. Well, we've heard about cyclists in places like Africa actually using smart trainers to access world-class competition and to gain wider exposure for themselves. So I'm curious to know, how do products like smart bikes and smart trainers play into the evolution of sport and competition?
It's a good question. I'm in the same way, you know, I think riding indoors and riding outdoors are two different sports. You know, I'm a little bit of a skeptic on the using it as a competition. Mm. It's incredibly fun as a competition, but you know, it's a different sport. So being able to ride indoors and compete with people around the world, it's a great way to compare and see how good you are at riding indoors. But you know, in a lot of ways, the things that you need to be good at to win a mountain bike race are certainly different than the things you need to be good at to win an indoor bike race.
Right.
You know, there's absolutely zero road handling skills or mountain bike handling skills necessary to ride a kicker. It really becomes an all out, you know, physical, who's the best, you know, who's the strongest, who has the most power to weight, the best power to weight ratio.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, can help identify athletes really well, but it's not as fun to watch or, you know, I think kind of like coaching and artificial intelligence and coaching, I think, the things that exist today with Swift and others, there's room for improvement. There's room to, you know, gamify that and make it so it's not just a, you know, power to weight ratio, you know, bring some skills into it. And I think in a little ways, I think, I'm a bit of a skeptic in that, you know, what may be the most fun is not trying to pretend that an indoor race is the same as an outdoor race. Like, let's just make it a different sport. It's indoor riding and gamify it and just make it fun, because that's what people want. You know, I want to be fit and I want to have fun getting fit. And so that's the challenge. And I think there's still room for improvement there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you make a good case for it being a separate sport, but I mean, we have esports now, and this is, you know, people, they're not even moving their legs. They're just moving their thumbs. And it's a big thing that people watch and they, you know, there's lots of money in it. You know, do you see that ever being a thing, you know, like its own separate sport of like indoor cycling and there's prize money and that sort of thing on the line? Or do you see it more as like a personal fitness and, you know, maybe gamification level where it's just sort of fun versus actual competition?
I think both. And being able to make it into a competition that is not the person with the highest power to weight ratio wins is probably where it could be the most fun. Just the, you know, the esports is really the person with the best hand-eye coordination. and so that's probably the same. You know, how can we make this fun for everyone? I think as soon as you make it a race with the highest power to weight ratio, you know, that drops it down to the, you know, 5% of the people are going to have fun. That's the people in the front.
Right. Just going to suffer.
50% are going to absolutely hate it.
Yeah.
So some way to balance that out so everybody has a chance to win. And in a lot of ways, just make it fun. Don't try to make it real. You know, you hear about, you know, e-doping and, you know, cheating on Zwift. It's like, to me, it's like, you know what, if you win a race, then make your race guys that are faster next time. And you know, maybe that means that the fastest guys are all cheating, but they're just racing themselves. You know, they're just racing each other at that point. I have a hard time understanding how people get so uptight about that. It's like, it's just a game.
Yeah.
Just have fun with it.
Well, that's interesting. You bring up e-doping. I mean, is that a real problem? Like, are people modifying their kickers or, you know, hacking into the software to get an advantage?
Oh yeah. Every which way. Lying about their weight, figuring out how to try to intercept numbers from the kicker and multiply them to make them stronger. And, people are trying to figure out how to encrypt the data so they can't cheat.
Oh, wow.
It's hard to keep people from doing it because, you know, cheaters are going to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough problem.
Yeah. Is that something you guys are working on that, like, people are actually like, oh, you need to make it so this guy can't cheat?
It's one of those things. I mean, if you hear it, like, it's like the CD companies with back in the day, you know, you just can't beat people that want to cheat.
Right.
We could spend a whole lot of time trying, but we'll never be able to do it. I mean, I could create a fake kicker stream. You know, anyone with enough technical chops can, you know, create an ant plus power output and they can make it whatever they want. Like, it's just really impossible to block cheating. You know, in an arena, you know, you put everybody in the same room on the same equipment,
yeah,
totally fine. But if people are sitting in their house, you know, by themselves, they can kind of get away with whatever they want. So and there's not going to be a real good way to block people from cheating, I don't think, in that realm.
Right.
Other than, you know, I think what people do now is they try to compare it to their other, you know, they look at their data on Strava and say, well, this guy's, you know, never done more than 300 watts for 10 minutes yet in this, you know, in this indoor race, he did 600 watts for 10 minutes. So
yeah,
that's how they flag cheaters.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're definitely making the case against this being a real competition and more of like informal competition, especially among friends. I mean, I know plenty of people who use it that way and compete against people that they know and trust and, you know, just kind of have fun with it.
Yeah, it can be both. But to me, it's the more you just use it as a way to get better at what you're doing and to have fun, mm-hmm, is a better use of your time than trying to, you know, like indoor cycling as an Olympic sport to me is a little silly. That's a personal opinion, but, you know, a lot of people think it's the next big thing. So maybe it is.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, what's next in the fitness tracking arms race? And I guess fitness technology. I mean, you mentioned how somebody in a group of friends gets a kicker and they start training indoors and they're able to ride faster than everyone else. But then everyone else gets a kicker. And so you're right back to where you started. So if everyone has access to the same tools, how can individual athletes use technology to gain an edge over competitors?
Oh, if I knew the answer to that, I think I don't know what I would do. I don't have an answer. I think it really comes down to discipline. You know, I think there's always the ability to be more disciplined than the other guys. Take advantage of the data you have, take advantage of coaching. And that's probably your only way. There's not a lot of, silver bullets anymore, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, do you think, was there a time, I mean, like looking back 10 years ago or 15 years ago, where that really did give people an advantage? You know, the guy who was an early adopter of, you know, say heart rate monitors or that sort of thing?
Oh, I definitely think there was a time, you know, not that long ago. I mean, indoor training, when I was the only person with a kicker, that definitely gave me an advantage. You know, I used to do triathlons and I had I was a tech nerd. So I had a really aero bike and I had set myself up in a really aero position and, you know, I could go 2 or 3 miles an hour faster with the same power in a triathlon than everybody else. And if you go to a triathlon today, that's not the case. Everybody has those bikes. So, you know, the field gets leveled over time. And I guess it does say kind of look at what the latest and greatest things are and try to stay on top of them, because you can get a little bit of an advantage for a little bit of time. But generally things equal out over time as people discover them, take advantage of them.
Right. So yeah, what's next? What's next for Wahoo or for just fitness tracking in general?
You know, I don't know. We obviously are always after the next big thing. There's no super exciting top secret stuff right now. At least not that I can tell you about.
That's just right.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things on the horizon that I think can be helpful. You know, for us, it's just continuing to help build products that people enjoy, that that help them be successful, help mm-hmm. you know, get technology out of your way, just make it useful and part of what your, you know, part of your everyday experience versus kind of a pain to use, and kind of keep that mantra. And you know, for me, it's always I'm always finding little pain points and trying to figure out how we can solve them. And all the folks at Wahoo do the same thing. We're always looking out for the next problem to solve.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to follow you and your employees on Strava. And then as soon as we see these, you know, like massive gains, we'll know that you guys have the secret sauce. You found the next thing, and we should all be looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to chat with me, Chip. I really appreciate it. And yeah, learned a ton about fitness tracking and sort of the advantages that can bring. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's great chatting with you.
Well, you can find out more about some of the products we mentioned in the show at wahoofitness.com. That's all we've got this week. We'll talk to you again next week.